Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of January, recording at 9:28 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. Global stock markets, well, this really did belong to the bulls. Although we had, I see, in Europe a tiny bit of easing in here today, but we're talking about less than a quarter of a percent for most of the indices, slightly more for the Swiss market index. But Asia, big for the ASEAN indices, big for South Korea, big for India, huge for China, which incidentally is closed for the Lunar New Year Golden Week holiday. And Wall Street closing up again today. We had a new We had a new high for the last few years on the NASDAQ 100 index. That's going above last year's highs. It did that yesterday. A little bit further follow through in here today. S&P is up to 315 and change. The Dow's up to 12,720. So, good stuff, pretty much all around. As you might expect, against that background, government bond prices have weakened so over the week, so yields have risen somewhat. Precious metals, they're behaving like risk assets. And they're so-called risk assets. I hate that terminology, but you know what I mean. And we saw that again today. When I say behaving like risk assets, I should really add that they're tracking Wall Street. Because when Wall Street was a little easier earlier, in the pre-opening hours on futures markets, we had gold down to 1645, but it closed at 1666 and change. And that's up over $8, and it just moved steadily higher as the U.S. stock market improved. Now, the other precious metals are moving in a similar fashion. For instance, early this morning, silver was down to 3028. But it's currently at 32.06. That's up over a dollar and a half. The industrial metals had a pretty good week, a little bit mixed in here today. Copper encountering some profit taking, but it's still at 375. So it's had a good week overall. The grain and bean complex, that was clobbered last week, lost some downside momentum in here this week. The main stories have not been among the agricultural commodities at all. Now, oil, as you know, had been strong on all those global tensions, particularly the Iranian story, but with Nigeria packing in a distant second, but that's eased here recently. We've got Brent down well over a dollar. It's just about $110 and a little bit of change. And we've got NYMEX down almost $2 right now, 98.46. And I think those are the main highlights overall. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, anybody who likes to talk about the January effect will like what they've seen so far, at least if they're long. What we've seen, of course, is that January has started strong, had a good first day, had a good first week. Had a good first 20 days in here, and the technical action has continued to move in line with unfortunately, with Fuller Money's expectations. And, you know, you go right back to that climactic selling activity that we saw in August, which we felt had established the region of the low, but it would need some support building, which we duly got. But in October, stock markets began to take off, and they saw a significant retracement in November, but nevertheless formed higher lows, and then have gone on and subsequently formed more higher lows. And we could say today, well, are we getting a little bit overextended in the short term? The answer is yes. But the more important point is that we had a fair amount of support building from August onwards. So the patterns look similar to small base formations. They're not unlike the patterns we saw at the bottom of the market in 2000 and in 2010, from which good recoveries took place. The leadership has been terrific. The sectors that we would expect to show leadership, we've seen most stock market indices move up to test, and an increasing number of them are moving above those 200-day moving averages. And they're breaking downward trends in the process as well. Now, among the big laggards are China and India, but as I've mentioned, both have had a good January here so far, and the action is quite encouraging. There are fundamental reasons for that, of course. There's a lot of money on the sidelines. Well, that's a technical reason, perhaps. Fundamental reasons. Monetary policy is accommodative and becoming more so in the Asian region. That's what investors are now discounting. As Asia picks up, you also get the Central and South American stock markets picking up, and actually some of them led because they moved on the, I'm gonna have a little drink here. Apologies for all that. What a pathetic incidence of human frailty there. Throat getting clogged up. But they, countries like Brazil, up again today, they were first to move on the interest rates. So, again, the action's all been good. I said to Owen today, you know, well, what looks really bad? And you have to scratch around. He said, well, Greece doesn't look very good, and it certainly doesn't. He said, Greece looks terrible, I think. And yeah, but it's been up 8 days in a row or something like that. But we're not buying Greece in here. The European banks, that banks index is still very much the Achilles heel for the European stock markets, but it's had a good week in here. See, yesterday, it showed strong gains. So let's go back to the favorable factors, the favorable fundamental factors. And I've pointed out daily in these audios that monetary policy, accommodative monetary policy, is about the best tailwind in the business. Now, if everybody's scared to death, that creates a big headwind. But some of those fears have abated. People are less fearful of the U.S. economy. Remember when absolutely everybody said that the U.S. or seemed to say that the U.S. economy either never came out of recession or was bound to be going back into recession during the second half of last year. And if that didn't happen, it would happen in 2012. Well, that's not happened. Everybody said that corporate profits were going to fall apart because we were seeing slower GDP growth last year. Well, we got the slower GDP growth, but corporate profits actually did considerably better. Because So many corporations really whipped their balance sheets into good shape, and they can do that. They can do that because where governments have to worry about unemployment and have to put out social safety nets, companies, well, they let people go and hire them when they need them and hire the people they need, and they're not interested in the people they don't need quite clearly. And I would argue that that's what companies should be doing, and working for their shareholders. So the autonomies led the way. Now we're probably getting a bit of a shift in here. I think we undoubtedly were getting a little bit of a shift in here as animal spirits pick up somewhat. We're seeing some of the laggards start to improve. For instance, we've had a terrific couple of weeks in these mining, depressed mining issues, the uranium miners, the rare earths miners have started to come back. So that tells us that animal spirits are, well, if they're not exactly euphoric, they're less traumatized than they were previously. And then the European situation. How many times have you heard that the euro was going to fall apart? People were saying that Germany was going to leave or should be thrown out, or that this country or that country was going to leave. Well, I don't doubt that at some stage we will get a country leave the European Union, and Greece would have to be top of the candidates list. And if it goes, Portugal would probably go at some point, not long after. But nobody's holding referendums or announcing referendums at this stage on leaving the European Union, which is a political construct. And in other words, it was created for political reasons. And yes, they talk about the economic side. Surely it'll work better if we all band together, eliminate transaction costs, currency transaction costs for starters, pool our interests. So there's been less of the pooling of interests, but they have eliminated the transaction costs, and all that's been a good thing. Trouble is, we know, I won't have to review all this, but we know that the fiscal discipline totally broke down, and the debt was allowed to just to grow and grow and grow, and the rest you know. Now, the European crisis is gradually, I think, going to or in terms of a description, we'll probably hear less of the European crisis as the year progresses and more about the European recession, because where's the growth going to come from? And I think this will concentrate the minds in some of these countries, and they will, I think, be looking towards growth policies. That's certainly what you or I would be doing in their shoes, I assume, if I may take that liberty of including you in my thoughts on that. So again, we haven't had the complete breakup and collapse. We have not had the global depression that people were talking about. And so confidence has improved somewhat, and they're putting some of that money back to work in the stock markets. And I think that's a wise decision. And we're seeing the benefits in or we're seeing the results in the gains that stock market indices and individual share prices are recording. And again, I said we're a little bit overbought in the short term, but the overall technical action is consistent with the end of the cyclical bear market first, and the resumption or the beginning of a cyclical bull trend that we are now experiencing. And I think we'll see more. No doubt 2012 will have at least one correction somewhere along the way, and that will frighten a lot of people as that always does. It's always frightening, isn't it, when we get corrections? But by and large, this is an environment that still favors the bulls. Now, in terms of those autonomies, and Owen has done such a fantastic job in singling these out and highlighting them and reviewing them. Bottom line here, as you look at those, bottom line is if something gets overextended relative to its 200-day moving average, you can expect a pullback. Whether that's, or you can expect mean reversion, whether that mean reversion is a sharp downward reaction or mostly sideways ranging, and usually it's a bit of both. If we see an autonomy fall out of favor for whatever fundamental or technical reason, and it just does happen, inevitably it happens, things aren't going to be strong in perpetuity, then it'll break beneath that 200-day moving average, which will also start to roll over. So when we see that, we know that that's really off the boil, underperforming, going to continue to underperform. Now, if it doesn't get too overextended and sees a pullback to those MAs, that's probably a buying opportunity, provided, again, the indices are above those 200-day moving averages, and the 200-day moving averages are also rising. Sounds simple, doesn't it? Well, very often, in terms of trend monitoring, what sounds simple is best, and it makes sense. If it gets overextended, you want to be careful. If it corrects that, then we can look for it to pick up again. Okay. Now, what else to mention here? Long-dated government bond prices. The interesting question in my mind is how long do they just range in potential top formation developments or potential base formation developments? If the global economy is not going to go into an extended recession, then we can see yields bottoming out and base building. the bond futures, in other words, would show signs of topping out overall. But we know the ECB is buying. We know the ECB is also lending huge amounts of money to European banks, enabling them to buy. And I've described it as a bit of a Ponzi scheme, because they can then leave those issues with the ECB as collateral and borrow more and buy more of the higher yielding government bonds. So that's the Ponzi scheme. Only unlike Madoff, that doesn't all go pear-shaped when more people are redeeming than are joining, because it's the ECB that's running the show in here, and they're still lending. So we're getting quantitative easing here by the ECB. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's absolutely horrendous. They should have used an Austrian, quote, solution, unquote, let the whole system collapse, not lend anybody anything, let all the banks go to the wall. Well, yeah, that's fine on paper. If you have to live through it, it's undoubtedly a nightmare. People say, well, it wouldn't all be that bad, but it's one of those NIMBY situations. It's pretty bad if it affects you and me. Now, just for a little bit of perspective here, it took over a decade for Europe to create that great big debt mess. So we shouldn't really demand that they sort it all out by pulling the plug and allowing this absolute huge collapse and deflationary depression in a matter of months. And what they're doing and what the Fed has done with its quantitative easing is took years to build up those big property bubbles and create all those nonsensical house purchasing policies that Fannie Mae was advocating. So they're trying to pare back, move out of this over another number of years in which they greatly extend government borrowing. And while the households, where they can, reduce their borrowing, and the corporations have certainly done that, which brings me back to the stock market and why I like the stock market. So that's where we are, as I see it. And I think growth will pick up, and I think that's now being reflected in a steadier tone for these industrial metals. Crude oil had run ahead, but that was more on global tensions than actual demand. And okay, demand for crude oil is growing in China, must be at least 20% a year. And that would be true for a number of the other growth economies. But the West is using less oil. And of course, we're also getting the alternatives and we're getting the shale coming on stream. Oil overall looks a bit high to me fundamentally. But the trouble is, we know that all it takes is the threat of some supply disruption to cause people to go piling in to the oil market and to push prices higher. Now, I mentioned this hundreds of times. I don't think that's an exaggeration because I've been saying it for years. We're in the second decade of an uncomfortably tight supply-demand balance in terms of crude oil. And it's really a question of when that next spike occurs to the upside. That spike to the upside can occur because of a supply disruption. It will almost inevitably occur if we get synchronized, as and when we get synchronized global GDP growth expansion. And then that creates higher inflationary pressures and it hits profit margins. It creates a recession. And we've seen that. We saw that in the first half of 2008. We saw that in the first quarter of 2011. I mean, some of my long-term veteran subscribers and friends, well, we remember it from the 1970s and onwards here. So that's something that that's a risk that we have to live with. But forewarned is forearmed, and it's nice to see oil come back, oil prices come back in here this week. Now, if we had oil spend the entire year in this just below $100 level that we have, well, it's $98.50 here on the WTI and $110 on the COMEX. If we had these levels hold, I beg your pardon, the Brent, $110 on the Brent. If we had these levels hold for the entire year, they're high, but they're not punishingly high. I think we would see. I think we would see the global economy do reasonably well. If prices are lower throughout much of the year, and they could well be, and then the global economy would do even better. We get a spike, and then that's going to cut right back into growth and cause problems. Okay, what else to mention in here? Precious metals. Precious metals are definitely behaving as a risk asset right now. So they're moving with Wall Street, and I think Wall Street's going to go higher. So that increases the probability that we have seen the reaction lows, that we did see the reaction lows for precious metals back in November. and that they are going to move up with Wall Street. But if you look at the chart of gold and silver, platinum, palladium, they're underperforming stock markets overall. Now, I think part of the reason for that is that people seem less enthused about the safe haven element of, this is my hypothesizing, but I would say that perhaps they're less enthused about the safe haven aspect of precious metals. So I'm watching. I'm a little annoyed with myself that I didn't participate when they were clearly looking overstretched to the downside. And I said, well, you've got maybe $100 downside risk in a bit, or but that's probably it. A good deal more on the upside over the medium to longer term. But I didn't, and I'm not going to chase these up higher, but I'm very pleased to see my equity portfolios improve significantly in the last few months. And they've got further to go to before I'll feel really happy about them. What else? Grains and beans. We do not have a food price inflation at this time. Now, weather will be a big factor, but it's been better than people expected. The crops have been better than, generally better than people expected. That's good news. That's good news for the global economy. So, all is not a disaster in the world out there, or in your portfolios if you're holding a number of reasonable equity positions. And on that note, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. All the best.